Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:19 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 11th, and 17 years since that eponymous event. And certainly, there is some room for reflection, considering also that it is 10 years since the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers, which really brought the financial crisis to a climax. But 10 years on, what we're dealing with now is the aftermath of the monetary and fiscal response to the financial crisis. You have a senior Communist Party official writing in Bloomberg today saying that China helped to bail out the world by initiating a massive stimulus program. Not only did it bail out the world, but it bailed out itself too. Let's not forget that. That also contributed to higher leverage, and they're currently in the process of deleveraging. Well, the aftermath of the credit crisis also resulted in a big rally off the lows from very depressed levels for commodity prices. That was certainly a benefit to Brazil, but we've certainly also seen this rise of populism, and there was a rather large decline in Brazil today as a result of a recent poll which suggests that Bolsonaro did not benefit materially from being stabbed last week, or he didn't benefit in the polls at least. But this rise of populism that we are seeing right across the world is not simply an isolated incident. It's a symptom of a much wider condition. And that is as a direct result of the policy response to the financial crisis, that quantitative easing achieved its goal of massive asset price appreciation. And certainly when we look at the S&P 500, for example, its very significant rally off the lows in 2009 of 666 to 2887 today is incredibly impressive, and it goes to show you that you can buy a rally in just about any asset if you're willing to spend $4 trillion. Well, that's only the figure that the USA achieved by increasing the size of its balance sheet. When we look at the total assets of central banks, they're in excess of 20 trillion. Well, perhaps no longer in excess of 20 trillion, but not so far away from it either. But I think the most important fact is that the size of this combined central bank balance sheet chart is declining, and it has been trending lower now for at least this year. Well, we know that the Federal Reserve is now contracting the size of its balance sheet. The ECB is no longer inflating the size of its balance sheet, and the Chinese are engaged in a form of deleveraging. Well, they talk about deleveraging, but what it in fact has resulted in is restricting capital to the banking sector, and not just all of the banking sector, but really a very specific part of it, particularly the regional banks, where there has been some egregious lending practices over the course of the last few years. Well, that is weighing on the Chinese market, but the Japanese have taken over a lot of the responsibility for inflating the asset prices generally. And they're not only still engaged in quantitative easing, but they're also buying shares. So the Nikkei has been largely range-bound now for 4 months. It's right in the region of the trend mean, and it was bouncing impressively today from that trend mean. So that is looking somewhat better. Then the second section index of small caps has been a reliable lead indicator for Japanese equities for as long as I can remember, at least, and it is still above the 7,000 level, but it did not rally in here today. Now, it really does need to bounce from here. If that were to break down, well, that would start to question the ability of the Nikkei to continue to advance from or perhaps it's the Nikkei's ability to break up out of this 4 month range. Well, if we look at what's going on in China, yes, they are deleveraging, but there is the additional point that when we go back and look at perhaps even more history from China. It's generally been the case, particularly I remember back in 2005, that the government came out and said that after a very prolonged period of declining prices, where the index almost halved, that they were going to start buying shares, and that turned into a state-sponsored, incredibly impressive advance. Then we had a similar condition in 2014 when they introduced options at exactly the same time that they introduced the stock connect between Hong Kong and Shanghai. Well, we don't have a state-sponsored bull market at the moment. Even this dribbling advance that we saw from the beginning of 2016 through to the end of 2017 was state-sponsored. They didn't want to have a very volatile market. But at the beginning of this year, they really did start to squeeze the financial sector, and that process is still in effect. And these prices continue to move to new lows, and there's a rhythmic progression of lower rally highs. And as long as that remains the case, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. Well, that's also having an effect on the Hong Kong listed shares, and they were at a new closing low in here today on the H share index. Well, China, having been admitted to the MSCI Emerging Markets Index, represents a rather significant weighting within it, and Tencent is a significant constituent in some of those emerging market ETFs, and it continues to extend its downtrend. There is, of course, this other point that a number of the high-flying Chinese internet companies or technology-driven companies have become the subject of oversight or mishaps from that have been at least in part contributed to by the administration. So Tencent had the new games being banned, and JD.com has suffered from its CEO, although it was in positive territory in here today. Then we have Alibaba, and Jack Ma is retiring. Well, then when we think about Baidu, it has been particularly quiet, but nonetheless, it has sustained this move below the trend mean, and this is a very volatile range that we've seen over the course of the last year. This doesn't look like a particularly bullish pattern, but it is right at the lower side of the lows we've seen over the course of the last 12 months. Then, what of course a lot of people are going to be looking at is the renminbi, and it continues to weaken. That we have seen some measures to, I think, delay the speed with which, or to reduce the speed with which it has been depreciating, but there hasn't really been the kind of big move to support the currency that would really suggest that the Chinese administration is serious. And when we think about the ramifications of trade wars, well, it's in China's interest to have a weak currency, and they have used the currency as a policy tool on multiple previous occasions. Then, when we look at what's going on in India, well, there is a process of mean reversion going on now, and the Nifty index was down in a dynamic manner in here today. The rupee remains in this downtrend, and it has been down on consecutive days, and it continues to plumb new depths. Well, if we look at it on a longer-term basis, it ranged for approximately 4 years, and ranges or explosions waiting to happen, and it has ex the dollar has exploded upwards. The dollar has been really quite firm against a whole slew of currencies, but just not all at the same time. And the higher interest rates and central bank activity to support some of the weaker currencies have begun to bear fruit, but we have not seen the kinds of big moves against the dollar that would really ram home I think a message to investors that a low of significance has been reached for some of these emerging market currencies. Then, when we look at, for example, the Brazilian real, it has paused around the 4.2% or 4.2 level, but this does not look like a bearish chart. It just looks like a consolidation within a trending environment for the US dollar. And that would suggest that we're going to see weaker levels for the Brazilian real. Then if we look at the South African rand, well, the dollar has held its advance over the course of the last few weeks. It's been somewhat more choppy over the last few days, but the rally that we've seen in the last 3 days for the rand has really not been particularly impressive. One upward dynamic for the dollar, and we're talking about the uptrend being renewed. Well, commodity-related currencies remain under pressure. The Aussie dollar, having pulled back rather dynamically on Friday, has been just inert in here for the last couple of days, but this remains a really quite consistent medium-term downtrend as it comes back down towards this potential area of support around the 70 cent level. And the New Zealand dollar has also pushed on to new reaction lows. It doesn't quite have the same area of support around 65 that the Aussie dollar has around 70 cents, but perhaps 60 cents is where the currency bottomed in 2015, and perhaps people might be looking at that. But as long as it is holding the progression of lower rally highs, well, this is still a consistent trend, and it has ranges one below another, so it's a staircase step sequence downtrend. And therefore, a break in that sequence would be required to really question that we're not going to see some additional downside. Well, when we consider that the dollar is perhaps consolidating or pausing against some of these currencies and trending higher against more, well, does that then is there any reason to believe that the euro is an exception? And when we look at the euro and the fact that it has held a progression of lower rally highs since February, well, that progression is still in effect, and we're right in the region of where it needs to rally from if that sequence is going to be broken. And it's hard to imagine what particular reason there should be for the euro to rally in a dynamic manner. Well, when we look at the majority of the indices in Europe, they're pretty mixed at the moment, and I think I should probably look at the daily charts, or excuse me, the closing levels for today, and we can see that it was pretty mixed. Well, the reality is that Europe has got two big factors that are major considerations for investors right now. The ECB is ending its quantitative easing program. So, where is the liquidity going to come from to help to inflate asset prices if it doesn't come from abroad? That's a significant factor, and it's one of the reasons why the banking sector has been under such pressure. Well, what I find rather interesting is that the German government is coming around to the idea of merging Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank, and they have been delisted. The Commerzbank is no longer a constituent of the DAX, or at least it will fall out of the DAX at the end of this month. And then the Deutsche Bank is no longer a constituent of the Eurostoxx 50. So, they have been sold out of ETFs that track those respective indices, and that represents a significant headwind. Well, I think it really would behoove us to look at the logarithmic scale charts. And Commerzbank, for example, rallied very impressively from the middle of 2016 until the end of last year, and it has at least paused around the 8 euro level. Well, a lot of selling pressure has resulted from it being excised from some of these major indices, and therefore the next question is, who is there left to sell? That's going to be a big consideration for these banks, and it may form the basis for some support starting to come back in. So I think that they are certainly worth keeping an eye on. Europe generally is facing not just the ECB ending its quantitative easing program, but it's got exposure to whatever is happening in Italy, and certainly the environment there has steadied up. But That doesn't mean that the populists are going to completely renege on all of their election promises. Then there is the continued stress that has the potential to rear its head once more in Turkey. And then, of course, Europe exports quite a lot to China. In fact, while China's current account surplus versus the USA continues to hit new highs, it's much more balanced against the Eurozone. It imports a lot of manufactured goods and raw materials, or I guess machines, from Europe. So what happens in China is having a knock-on effect for what's happening in Europe as well. And that is, I think, a rather significant outcome. Well, what a lot of people are now talking about is Hurricane Florence and it moving up towards the Carolinas. It's one of only a very small number of hurricanes that of this strength that have hit this far north. And it has the potential to cause tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars worth of damage. Well, it is acting as something of a tailwind for oil prices, despite the fact that it's unlikely to hit the main oil producing platforms anywhere near the Gulf. But what this dynamic here today is helping to confirm is support around the $65 area. And this continues to represent just a range within an otherwise reasonably rhythmic trending environment. That's particularly the case when we look at Brent crude, which is coming back up towards this $80 area, which has been the upper side of its range since May. That $80 area has been a region of resistance, but the most likely scenario is that it will break on the upside, that this has been a reasonably consistent advance, that the reaction that we've seen since May has been relatively similar size to the one we saw in January, and it has continued to hold the region of the trend mean. So this is a reasonably rhythmic advance. What that also suggests is that, the rally from the breakout up to the peak is approximately $10, so when it breaks out, I think it's reasonable to conclude that we're going to see a rally up towards the $90 area. And $90 oil is not so far away from the peaks that we saw back in 2011 and 2012. It's not surging higher. We've had plenty of time to get used to the potential for higher oil prices. But in absolute terms, the higher oil prices go, well, the greater the tax that represents for GDP growth, so particularly for consuming nations. So what happens with oil is a significant event. Then when we take a look at what's going on with copper, it has so far been struggling to rally. It has been consolidating, and this range is below the most recent one. So this is still trending down, and it really would need to sustain a move back above $2.75 to trigger a midpoint danger line stop, and so far there has been precious little evidence that it is about to do that. Then gold prices were really quite quiet in here today, but they are coming back up towards this $1,200 area. If it can push above the $1,225 area, well, then we're talking about having clearly broken the progression of lower rally highs, and then we can start talking about a potential reversion back up towards the mean. Certainly, there has been a lot of really very bearish sentiment expressed about gold and the precious metals, and they are really quite oversold in the short term. Well, the other point, of course, is that US Treasury yields today were up in a rather dynamic manner and are coming back up to test this 3% level. Well, the yield has got up to the 3% level on at least four occasions and has only been able to break out once, and then not for very long. But I think the more important point is that there has been a lot of commentary about the size of the large short position in Treasuries. I was reading an article before I started recording, talking about how that CFTC data is misinterpreted. I'll post it tomorrow. But if there isn't as large a big short position in treasuries, then the potential for a short covering rally is perhaps not as great as it might have been. Well, the other point is that if we were to simply take the labels off the charts and just look at the price action, or in this case, the yield action, well, this has been a pretty inert consolidation relative to the kind of volatility that we know it is capable of. Then it has held the progression of higher reaction lows. It has bounced from the region of the trend mean. Well, if it can sustain a move back above 3%, we are talking about renewing a medium-term uptrend and breaking up out of what is effectively a 7-year base formation. It is a potentially a very important event. And 2-year yields are also breaking out. They're starting to price in the potential for more than 3 interest rate hikes. Well, we know we're going to, it's almost certain we're going to get one interest rate hike this month, then perhaps even another in December. Well, 2 years out, it's hard to imagine that in the absence of a recession, that we're not going to have at least a few more. That would suggest that there is plenty of scope here for the 2-year to price in more interest rate hikes. That's also one of the fundamental drivers behind the dollar's rally. It, of course, is not going to last indefinitely. Eventually, the stimulus that was enacted from the tax cuts and the repatriation of profits and the cut to the corporate tax are going to run their course, but they haven't run their course just yet. And when we look at the performance of Wall Street, well, we've been consolidating now for the last few days. The Nasdaq, in fact, has a down, excuse me, an upside key reversal in here today, or at least an outside day. Upside follow-through tomorrow would confirm a low of at least near-term significance, and the progression of higher reaction lows since April continues to be sustained. These are rather important characteristics. Then the Russell 2000 has held the breakout from that most recent range, and these have been the leading indices, so they're still trending higher. Then if we look at the Dow Jones, it had firmed, but it is still lagging. It was the index that had accelerated most all the way up to the peak in January, and so far it has not yet been able to break out to new high ground, but neither is it going down. I think that's a rather important point. Well, anyone who's looking at the Dow theory will be looking at the fact that the transportation index has broke out this week. So if we see the Dow also breaking out, well, then that's a Dow theory buy signal. That you have both the transports and the industrials breaking out to new high ground. Well, that's one of their definitions for a bull market. So Europe remains I think, susceptible to selling pressure or underperformance as a result of its exposure to some of the weaker markets. The Nasdaq is the clear leader among the mega cap indices. And not least because of the outperformance of technology. Well, the other index I think is worth monitoring is the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index. It was in negative territory in here today. It was unable to hold that breakout immediately following the peak in January. And if it cannot sustain this move above the trend mean, well, that's going to represent a significant loss of breath for the technology sector. So I think this is an important index to monitor, not least because it trended so impressively and beautifully consistently higher from the beginning of 2016 until really about March of this year. And now we've got this lengthier range, and I think one of the most memorable sayings that David came up with at the chart seminar was that a bigger range is seldom a reliable continuation pattern. That is certainly something to bear in mind as the semiconductors index continues to range. Well, I think there is still scope for Wall Street to consolidate, that Europe has a lot of work to do to repair its consistency, and there's no real evidence yet that the selling pressure in emerging markets has completely abated. That doesn't mean that we're not going to have better buying opportunities in the emerging markets. China has a history of state-sponsored bull markets. It's not doing it right now, but that doesn't mean it won't do it in future. India is prone to bouts of volatility, which means that the chances are that we're getting being set up for the next good buying opportunity. But the continued downward pressure that we see on commodity prices is also something to ruminate on, considering just how reliant the commodity complex is on Chinese demand. And if we simply take the underperformance of commodities for what it is, then the reality is that it does give us at least some intelligence as to the health of the manufacturing and the infrastructure sector in China. If I had to name one risk, it is China, considering that it is one of the worst performing markets right now. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.